Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know, BBM Bumabrib Media, 99.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from and to all our traditional owners across the daily country of ours. Welcome back to National Talk Black. Have your say, your mob, yarn up strong. We're in across the nation thanks to NERS and all he is here for your yarn. And now we're going to catch up a yarn now with Anthony Beavan, partner at Grant Thornton, and the federal government appointed Anthony Beavan and Tony Johnson from Grant Thornton Australia to administer the stolen wages settlement distribution scheme. And we got Anthony with me in the studio here this morning. Anthony, a very good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. Pleasure to be here.
Great to have you here. Thank you very much. And look, a smile on our dial for a lot of our mob. Long time waiting. Let's talk about the stolen wages. And first, let's ask the question, what is the stolen wages class action?
Trevor, the stolen wages class action was litigation that was started in the federal court in about 2016, mm-hmm. and it relates to the stolen wages practices that occurred between 1937 and 1975. And during that period of time, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people were required to live on reserves and missions and islands, mm-hmm. and they were also required to work as part of the requirements of the legislation that existed at that time. Now, the requirements of the legislation was that even though people worked, they actually didn't receive their wages. The government retained their wages,
yes,
and kept their wages in a trust account, and people could request the administrator of the community, which was usually the sergeant of police, if they required money, and it was called pocket money. Mm. When the scheme...
It wasn't classed as wage, was it?
No, it wasn't classed. It was classed as wages, but it was retained by the government. Mm. So people couldn't go and access their own money and spend their own money. They had to go and ask someone for permission to access their own money and to spend their money. And when the scheme closed in 1975 and the legislation was repealed, there was still a lot of money left in that trust account. And from 2002 to 2018, the Queensland government had what was called the Stolen Wages Reparations Scheme, mm-hmm. and that was to hand back people's money to them that was still held in that trust account. Now, at about 2016, Mr. Hans Pearson, who grew up in Hope Vale and Palm Island and Innisfail, he at the time said that the money that was being paid out wasn't sufficient, so he started litigation in the federal court to say we're owed a lot more than...
Well, we're talking interest too, aren't we?
Oh, lots.
And then we're talking about the so-called award wage?
This is separate from the award wage.
Okay.
This is people's money that was taken by government, retained by government, and the record keeping in a lot of cases wasn't accurate. So people worked for many years, like Mr. Pearson worked for many years, mm-hmm. on stations, other working places, on the roads, for councils. And Mr. Pearson said, well, you know, the records don't show how much money I received because I hardly received any money. So the litigation was commenced where Mr. Pearson and others said we're owed a lot more money than what was being paid out by the Queensland government. And in September last year, the Queensland government agreed to settle and agreed to pay $190 million compensation as part of the class action that Mr. Pearson had started. And that's the fifth largest class action settlement ever in Australian history. So quite a lot of money.
And look, it's owed to the people.
It's not owed to them. It's their money.
It's their money. Well, there you go. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so where are we at with that? I mean, applications have closed.
Yeah. So applications closed on the 21st of November. and we currently have 12,400 people who've been registered as claimants. But because we're talking 1937 to 1975, we're talking most of those people are elderly now, and 70% of them have actually passed away now. So this, what the courts have allowed is for a spouse, a husband or a wife of that person, if they've passed away, to claim on their behalf,
mm-hmm.
or if there is no spouse, the children.
The children care.
Yeah.
Okay, but they would have put that application in.
Yeah, before
that
the 21st
of
November.
The rules of engagement, or rules for the application. And if the families have put in the application, they're there. Like I said, it's all shut off in November last year.
That's right.
Okay, so the people who are lucky enough to put the application in. So the horse is ready to bottle for those people who didn't put an application in?
That's right. So we've had 14,501 people register for the 12,400 claimants. So what we're doing now is the cut-off date for people to provide us with their photo IDs and bank accounts is the 28th of August. So we're spreading the message that even though you registered on the 21st of November, if you didn't provide us with your photo ID or with your bank account details in November, we need those now, because obviously we can't pay people without bank account details, and photo IDs are important to ensure we're paying the right money to the right
people. So, Anthony, we're having this conversation on National Talk Black going across the nation. So a lot of our mob in Queensland are listening to the conversation. What sort of conversation or contact that you're having with the people? Are you letting them know or promoting it that way? I mean, Facebook or whatever, or emails? Are you in touch?
So we have fortnightly emails go out to people, but because we're dealing with a lot of elderly people, they don't have emails. So
exactly.
So we wrote to everyone by post, the old-fashioned way. On the
snail mail.
Snail mail.
Yep.
That's right, on the 7th of April. And for those that haven't provided us with details, we wrote to them again last week. So we've provided snail mail, we do fortnightly emails, we've got the website, we've got a telephone call centre, and we're also doing community visits as well.
Oh, good.
So last week I was on Saibai, Horn Island, Bamiga, New Marpoon, Thursday Island. Tomorrow I'm travelling to Brisbane to meet with claimants in the Brisbane area.
Yes.
And next week we're going to Cooktown, Hope Vale, Woodjill, and also Mornington, Doomadgee, Pomperow.
So you got the number of and the details and the contact details of the applicants. So you'd also know out of that, who has not showed ID or bank details? So that should bring the numbers down in regarding being in touch with them. Yeah,
it should
get in touch with them.
It should, Trevor. And that's my concern at the moment is, of the 14,500, we still have 6,000 people that haven't provided us with a bank account detail or a driver's license or photo ID or birth certificate or some sort of paper proving their identity. And that's really concerning to me, because we've only got 25 more days before it closes off, and obviously we can't pay people without bank account details.
And so what happened to those 25 days if we have to miss those 6,000 odd people?
If we miss those 6,000 odd people, then the money goes back into the pool, and those people that have registered their bank account details and provided their ID and updated their details, they'll receive more money.
And so that'll divvy out to the people who put the application, photo ID, bank details.
That's right.
That'd be shared with the rest of them.
So the money will still go to community. It won't go to our firm. It won't go to the court.
No.
It won't go to anyone else. It'll go to the people. But
yes.
Given that we've had 14,501 people register, we really want everyone to get their bank account details up to date, give us their photo ID so we can spread this money as much as possible.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, the money will go to people and communities and families that are deserving of it. It's just we'd like to see that spread more widely.
Yes. So to all our mob out there, we're Yana here on National Talk Black on radio. You've been approached by emails through the Grant Thornton Australia ministers, the administration who has stolen wages settlement distribution scheme. So they're trying to contact you. So you mob are listening out there, the Murray Grapevine, let the mob know that you need to put in your, well, the application's in, but they need photo ID, need bank details. And the money is owed to the family. Stolen wages, so very important. The work that you're doing, Grant Thornton Australia, it's a very important work that needs to be done. And our fight regarding closing the gap and stolen wages, stolen generation, all the above. There's, a silver lining here, but it's sad that in regard to what has happened. But we're here to make it better, make it right, you know. And the money, like I said, well, it's not owed to them. It is their money, you know. With that money, is there interest as well? I mean, like, that all comes into play, doesn't it? The yep. calculations and regarding the money are owed to the people?
So the money's in term deposits at the moment, earning interest.
Yes.
So at the end of the day when we go to pay people the money, which will be by the 6th of December, the money in the term deposits generating interest, that goes into the bucket, and that money will be used to pay out to people as well. So it's still earning interest, not a lot at the moment,
sure,
given that interest rates are so low. But the main message is 28th of August is the cut-off date. Mm. We can't extend that because we've got elderly people who are passing away every week.
Exactly.
And so we need to get the money to them as quickly as possible. So every day we delay means a possibility that we're losing more
elders.
Well,
all the families who put in the application, they should know what they put the application in for. So they haven't really completed it. We need the photo ID and need the bank details
to
receive the money
by the
28th of August.
28th of August is the last date. And if people haven't received any emails or letters from us, they can contact us on 1300 591 545.
That number again, 1300
591 545.
545.
Or they can go to the website, which is, it's an easy one to remember, stolenwages.com.au.
There it is, stolenwages.com.au. All right, the number again, 1300 591 545. So for all the families out there, if you put the application, it's not completed yet. We need the photo IDs and the bank details. When we're talking about the money owing to the people, the money that's theirs, and giving back to them. We're talking all industries here, and what sort of work were we talking regarding people who was working back in the time who didn't get paid?
We're talking about in the Torres Strait, a lot of people worked on purling luggers. In the mainland, a lot of the men worked for council. They worked on cattle stations. They worked on road crews. And a lot of the women worked as domestic help. Cleaners, administration people worked in the shops. So it's all sugarcane farms. So there was all different types of work involved. And as I said, during that period, the legislation required everyone who lived on a reserve or a mission or an island to undertake work or to have a formal exemption. Mm. So everyone was required to get up and go to work.
Sure.
And their wages, though, were retained by government. So what we're doing and what Mr. Pearson has been leading the fight for many years is that people to get their money back. And so we never refer to it as compensation or we never refer to it as interest. We just call it that's people's money.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're focused on is giving people back their own money and it's what they're entitled to.
So all told, how many applications did you receive?
We received 14,501 people have registered for a total of 12,400 claimants. That's the people that actually did the work. But as I said, about 70% of the claimants have now passed away.
Yes.
And so there might be multiple children that have applied for mum or dad. So that's why we have a higher number than the number of people that were what we call claimants. People,
and because the application, of course, the date is closed. You're now dealing with the people who are successful applicants
who've already registered.
Okay, so you would say that there's a lot of people out there who didn't even fill out an application or missed the opportunity. You would have to agree to that.
Yeah, there would be some people who missed out, and we do come across them, but it was really widely advertised and there were a lot of community visits. So the most of the communities we visit, most of the people we speak to were aware of the registration requirements, and we think that the vast majority of people have registered. Because it happened last year, started from 2016 to the 21st of November last year, some people may have forgotten about it. Their bank account details have changed, or they didn't give them to us at the time.
Moved address, whatever.
Moved address.
Change of phone number.
So it's really important that if you did make a claim from 2016 to November 2019, it's important to make sure that we've got all your up-to-date details so that we can keep you informed. But most importantly, when it comes to pay the money in December, that we can get the money to you.
And for the people who did miss out on the putting in an application, the horse is really bolted for them?
The horse is bolted. It's over, and the federal court has said that's the line in the sand, was the 21st of November. So unfortunately, those people will miss out, and this is the last ever round for stolen wages. There won't be another round.
That's in this state, Queensland?
In Queensland.
Do you know if it's the case for other states and territories in this country?
There's a legal firm called Shine Lawyers.
Shine Lawyers, yes.
I think they sponsor the Cowboys. They're looking at stolen wages claims in other states and territories. And you can go to their website. They've got information about contacting them for people that worked on reserves and missions in other states and jurisdictions as to whether there might be opportunities for them to lodge a claim for stolen wages. But we're focused on Queensland.
Of course, yep.
And we're working, getting this money back to Queensland as quickly as possible.
And 6th of December is when you're divvying out the money, and you're going to feel like Santa Claus, aren't you, my friend?
Yeah, well, it's as I said, our priority is we're losing elders all the time.
We've
got to get the money out to people as quickly as possible. But we're also aware that there's a lot of family pressures around Christmas time. And so that first week of December, second week of December is when school starts breaking up and people start travelling and wanting to go Christmas shopping. So we really want to get the money to people around about that time.
And look, money's only a tool, Anthony, and it's money that is owned by the people. But the emotion and the spiritual side of things that comes with this, and that's devastating, especially for our loved ones who have passed on. We'll take what we can in regard to, you know, closing that gap.
That's right. It's you know, some of the stories we hear from elders and their families about what their parents went through, and you know, you just listen to Mr. Pearson, who was the lead person in the litigation against the Queensland government. His stories about needing permission to get married, permission to move from Hopevale to Palm Island, not having access to any of his money, even though he worked hard all his life.
Exactly.
You know, he lives in a housing commission house. He's never had the opportunity to buy a house because he's worked all his life. But his savings for a long period of time were held by the government. So there's some really, really heart-wrenching stories.
Of course there is.
Lots and lots of heart-wrenching stories.
And look, our argument from the get-go, especially with a lot of government or non-Indigenous people who don't understand our fight, when we're talking about closing the gap, what have you, I say to non-Indigenous people who, you know, I don't get in an argument. It takes two people to argue. But if I take your kids off you, well, that's stolen generation. Mm-hmm. You do a job for me, but I don't pay you, well, that's stolen wages. It is what it is.
It is what it is. And, you know, these payments that we're doing in December aren't going to fully compensate people for what's happened in the past. But at least, as you said, it's important to recognise what happened, and it'll go some way to helping those old people that are still with us and their families. If those old people have passed away, it's not going to solve all the problems and issues. Absolutely not. But
another step towards closing that gap.
That's right.
you know, in this area anyway. There's still a lot of gaps to be closed, but and also not only in the state, in all states and territories in this country.
But equally, it's about sending a message that these sort of things just should not have happened.
Exactly.
And should never happen again.
Exactly. And it won't happen again. Thank you very much for sharing, Anthony. I look all the best to you. Just confirming that web page again.
www.stolenwages.com.au.
.com.au. All right. So there's a message to all you Deadly Mob out there, family, loved ones, for the people who put the successful applicants and put an application regarding stolen wages in this state, Queensland. We are still chasing photo IDs and bank details, and that closes on the 28th of August. Okay, so not long before that closes, so don't miss that boat, so to speak. But thank you very much for sharing. The number again, 1300 591 545, all the W's, solemnwages.com.au, and Grant Thornton Australia will be there to take all the details and minister the stolen wages settlement distribution scheme. Thank you very much, Anthony. All the best to you. Take care, right?
Thanks, Trevor.
All right, beautiful. So there it is. Look, a light at the end of the tunnel, yes, but a sad affair in regarding money that belongs to the people is going back to the people. We still need to complete the application. That's photo IDs and bank details. So make sure you chase that up, your mob. You know who put the application, and you know that it hasn't been completed, and need to be in touch with Grant Thornton Australia. The number again, 1300 591 545, and all the W's stolen. stolenwages.com.au, and hopefully sheds a light on the other states and territories, and we can have things happening in those states and territories as well. Have your say. Jan Armstrong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Want to hear what you want to talk about, your mob, all ears, and if you want to talk about that subject, by all means, give me a call. Too Deadly.
I'm a long way away from my country. It's a long time since I've reappeared. It's a feeling I feel when you're close on the wheel, and I'm missing the touch of your hand. It's no good, this feeling sorrow. Just go out and face it alone. And I'm waiting tonight, watching the night, and I'm thinking of just going. Will just turn you around. You can follow your dreams, but it's not like it seems, 'cause your heart will just turn you around.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, your Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's Bumabibra Media, BBM, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your Sabre callers on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, look, we're living in an upside-down world at the moment thanks to COVID-19 and the space that we're living in, and blessed are the flexible. It does cause some sort of upsets situation regarding how we live life in regard to jobs and finance and health, but also for standing up for our mob as First Nation people of this country. And we had death of George Floyd in America, and which then shone light on black deaths and custody in this country, 437 odd deaths, and very sad. And that in itself is a pandemic when we're talking about COVID-19. Look, we're going to catch up a yarn with the ADA Vice President of the Australian Indigenous Doctors Association, and that's Brother Shannon Spring on the line. Shannon, very good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good, Trev. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, a very important discussion. Indigenous doctors call for public protest to be postponed. Just enlighten us in regarding, Aiden, how they stand and how they see the situation as in First Nation people and our march and our voices for black deaths in custody, please, Shannon.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, in the last few weeks, it's been a really difficult time for a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and communities in terms of wanting to be out there and supporting our brothers and sisters who have been affected and continue to be affected by the ongoing racism in our communities. And I think it's really important for the wider community to understand the desperation that our people are in, you know.
Yes.
When we look at some of the drivers of what makes our people and family need to march in a 1 in 100 year pandemic,
sure.
And you know, it's one of desperation,
sure.
And that hasn't gone away. So, look, I fully endorse and I fully support the need to get traction and to abolish systematic racism for our people. You know. You know, we only need to look in Australia. I know you mentioned this started in the US, but we've been fighting this for a
exactly.
very long time in Australia as well.
Exactly.
And since the 5th of June last month, we've had three more black deaths in custody in WA.
So that in itself is a pandemic of black people being in custody and dying while in custody. That's a pandemic.
That has been going on for some time, and when we're not seeing enough action about this, you know, over 29 years ago we had a Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody with 330 plus recommendations out of that.
Mm.
Now only probably a handful have been fully implemented, and probably some half haphazardly implemented. So, you know, it's hard to swallow.
Sure.
For the community to continue to see these black, saying Black Lives Matter when we're not seeing a reciprocal commitment.
Look, it is what it is regarding time. Timing is everything in life. Sad fact that George Floyd has passed because of this. When you look at our brothers and sisters, 437 deaths, and then there's a pandemic here in regard to COVID-19. But it's raised its ugly head in regarding the fight that we've had at the table before COVID-19. And if it shines a light on just to grab the attention of non-Indigenous Australian or non-Indigenous people of the world or governments of the world that something needs to be done here, then, like I said, it is what a TIS, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we've had to defend ourselves as an organisation by, not supporting people gathering together in large groups around this protest. And, I just really want to make clear to the listeners out there that this doesn't imply that we don't support, the need for action for our people.
Sure.
That would be the wrong messaging. You know, as a leading Indigenous doctor association, it's our responsibility to actually look at what's happening for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities.
Mm.
And whilst I definitely sympathise and acknowledge the hurt that people are suffering and demand change, the unpredictability and the nature of COVID that can have on our communities can be absolutely devastating. And we put media out around that before. And, you know, and some of our very remote communities have been locked down where they haven't been able to get food.
Exactly.
So it's a very, very complex issue. And, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. So, you know, our organisation, we acknowledge that we need to live to fight another day.
Exactly.
And if COVID gets into our communities, we've got lots of vulnerable people, lots of elders that can be potentially affected by this. So it's a complex issue. It's not straightforward. I fully support those people that want to, you know, that wanted to march and they felt the need to march. That's completely understandable.
Well, that march, you would say, and agree, there, my brother Shannon, is it's a bit of a, like a, well, it's a tablet, it's a medicine for our people in regarding our fights, and it's good for our spirits, you know what I mean? Like I said, it's a tool we use, don't we?
Yeah, and we've always used it. You know, protest has had a really strong, prominent mechanism for social change for our people. You know, we can produce all the evidence, we can produce the deadliest research and all those sorts of things, but often those things fall on deaf ears.
Exactly.
And people have to resort to taking to the streets again.
True.
So I fully acknowledge protest as a mechanism for change, but during a pandemic it's difficult. And we probably need to rethink how we protest and cause social disruption in other ways without you know, risking the health and well-being of our elders and our communities at the same time. And that's tricky.
Yes, well, as all people of the world are praying for a vaccine, and, you know, we've got smart people on this planet, and the vaccine will come. Until that time, we just need to live by the rules that are in place, that is the vaccine as such, social distancing and washing hands and what have you, and staying at home. But come after COVID-19, then all guns blazing regarding marches and what have you, you know, and stronger than ever.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and I think there is still room for more media and more social community raising about the concerns facing us at this, you know, at this point in time, and also what's happened in the past. And, you know, without change, we're going to expect, you know, there are predictable expectations that the lives of young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people will be affected when they come in contact with our justice system. And that's a really, really sad reality. You know, and... We find ourselves in complex times, but, you know, our people are intelligent, our people are clever.
Resilient. We're not going away anywhere.
Absolutely. And we've dealt with pandemics before. We've dealt with rife infections in our communities before, and we've also dealt with racism in our communities before. Mm. So I think we within the community have the capacity and we have the strength to endure this.
Yes.
And get through it as a collective nation.
Exactly. And there goes the phrase, we are all in this together.
I think certainly for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, we are all in this together.
True.
But, you know, we also rely on what's happening outside of our community as well. So, you know, even though that we didn't have evidence about any cases coming from the last protest, which is a really good thing.
That's right.
We actually
because fingers were pointed at us. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure people were hoping that, you know, that there would be cases among our community. But, you know, There was a different reality at that point in time. You know, the community transmission was quite low.
Yes, exactly.
So when we're moving forward and when we're planning, we're trying to make decisions based on what's happening at this point in time and being in the moment. And that's been very difficult to predict and still maintain the traction, you know, the traction and the pressure that we need to exert in order to get some social justice.
Thank you. Shannon, very much. Look, great conversation. Thank you for sharing. The Vice President there of ADA, Australian Indigenous Doctors Association, very strong words there. And look, all the best to you. You stay safe, my brother, and we'll talk soon, eh?
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Trev. Thanks for having me on the program. And, you know, just a shout-out to all your listeners out there is that stay strong, stay committed. And, you know, I 100% and I do believe that we will get through this time, yes. And also we'll be able to get some traction, you know, when we get out the other end.
Too deadly.
You know, we waited long enough.
So. That's it, my brother. All right, you take care, Shannon. All the best. You take care, mate.
Thanks, Trev. Catch you later.
Bye-bye. A deadly yarn there with the Vice President of AIDA, the Australian Indigenous Doctors Association, Shannon Springer, his name is, and talking about the Indigenous Doctors' call for public protest to be postponed. Tread carefully, tread softly, but stay strong is the message there. Have your say, yarn strong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. That deadly number is 1-800-422-416. Call that number, yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev. Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbo Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service. 1-800-422-416. Give the Murray a call. Let's have a yarn. Too deadly.
People, my people, Aboriginal people, don't forget what we're fighting for. We Aboriginal people of this land. Custodians, my people, my people, Aboriginal people across the land, don't forget what we're fighting for. They took us away from family, set us up.
This is Tanya Kernighan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. BBM Bumbo Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service. Have your say, yarn up strong on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Yeah, we are living in the world of a pandemic and regarding COVID-19 and to adapting to life in the sense of wearing face masks. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Dr. James Collett, who's from the RMIT, Melbourne University, and just talking about the, adapting to face masks during the pandemic. A very good morning, Doctor. How are you?
Morning, Trev. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Thinking of you guys down there in Victoria and the second wave of the pandemic. So living in a different world, now wearing masks, more so Victorians, and the law has been passed that you have to wear masks. So tell us about the adapting to wearing face masks during the pandemic and how's it affecting people, psology-wise.
Yeah, so down in Melbourne, we're all wearing masks now. Who knew that 2020 was going to turn out like this? So the masks are something where, look, it's easy enough to put a mask on, and we're seeing a lot of the community taking that up. But there's still people who think, you know, that they're a bit worried about the masks, or they don't want to wear one. And so just thinking about what some of the challenges are so that we can get more people embracing masks, because they're great for helping keep our community safe. And I think the main challenge is that the masks, they're seen as something uncontrollable.
Yes.
So they're seen as, oh, you know, the government's telling me I've got to wear this mask, and I don't want to. And they're a way of kind of taking back control.
Being rebellious. So
yeah, exactly. And that's what we're seeing in the United States as well, with the behavior around wearing masks there. But the thing is, when you think about it, there's a lot of stuff about COVID-19 that we can't control.
Mm.
And masks are one of the few things we can. Okay. You know, you and I, we can't vaccinate ourselves, but we can certainly put a mask on and help protect ourselves and the community that way. So it's actually something where, when you think about it, it's really a great way for individual citizens to take control.
And when you look at it in regarding human nature, and the thought process of, we can only be in control of what we can be in control of, you know, and we can't control the pandemic because we don't have a vaccine for the virus, but we can control on how we live, for example, the mask, which is for a short time, hopefully, to overcome this pandemic, yes?
Exactly, yeah. So there's a whole lot of uncertainty, and there are a lot of people who become very anxious when things are uncertain, and that makes sense, you know, that's absolutely okay.
Outside the norm.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the masks have maybe become a bit of a symbol of that, but really they should be a symbol of, oh, we can put this on and, you know, everyone can do their bit, and it's something where we all have the power to help out, which is great.
Well, then, wearing a mask, you can still go about your life, you know, whether you're going to fuel up a car or going for a jog or going shopping, but you can still do your normal activities. You've just got this mask on, and you don't have to wear it when you're in the car, but just when you get out or when you get out of the house, yes?
Exactly, yes. So the masks are for out in public. One of the challenges that I think we're seeing is that, when you think about it, a lot of our communication is non-verbal. So we talk words, but we also use facial expressions. We also use body language.
So there lies the frustration regarding communication.
Part of when we convey emotion, you know, think about smiling and that sort of thing, and how it changes up what you're saying to someone. And so we've got to remember with the masks that they're cutting off, you know, literally 50% of our face. And that means that people can't see necessarily if we're smiling, or maybe we're being sarcastic or something like that when we're wearing a mask.
Yes.
So the big message to the community is that we need to just be aware that it's a bit easier for people to misinterpret what we might be saying. Especially, don't forget, in schools, people are wearing masks. So think about, you know, all the people talking to each other in a class and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Think about people talking to shop assistants at supermarkets. So the big message is that it's more easy to be misinterpreted. So you've just got to give people the benefit of the doubt and also be more direct with things. For example, if someone, you know, they can't see you smiling behind the mask, so tell them, oh, I'm smiling, or, you know, no worries, mate, I'm just having a go. That kind of thing.
Just add more to the communication regarding the verbal communication. Just letting you know, I'm smiling and I'm thanking you for your service.
Thanks so much, mate. It's, always a pleasure.
Thank you. You take care. All the best to you.
You too, mate. Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, Delian, there with Dr. James Collett, getting that communication right there. I was using the example of smiling, letting the person know across the counter, yes, I'm smiling and thank you for your service. But he mistook saying the fact that, oh, yeah, well, the interview is finished, so I'll get going. Thank you, Trevor. No, it's not the case. I was still yarning, but Dr. James, I got the gist of it. And there lies the communication, very important. But when you're wearing masks, as Dr. James pointed out, the communication, it's facial communication, then goes missing, so to speak, because you've got the mask on. So we need to add more in the conversation or in the communication regarding the verbal side of it, just to let you know I am smiling behind the microphone and having a daily yarn with you mob out there here on National Talk Black. And there's my smile. See my white teeth? feel it. There it is. So that's communication. So the topic there with Dr. James Collett, the psychologist from RMIT University, was the adapting to face masks during the pandemic. And you're finding certain Karens out there who don't want to be wearing masks because don't tell me about boats sort of attitude. But it's about the vaccine, which we haven't got for the virus, COVID-19. So we need to change our way of living for a short amount of time, hopefully, until we overcome this pandemic. And we just need to all abide by the rules, so to speak, you know. You mightn't like wearing a mask, but you got to get uncomfortable to get comfortable is what I always say. But look, have you say, you might be enough strong, add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yarn with the ball, you on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbleberry Media, 19.7 FM. And we go across the nation, thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Have you say, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. Michael Charlton, Where the Fire Burns, that album. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, 1-800-422-416. Yarnum with the Bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. Live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbleberry Media, 90.7 FM. Go across the nation, thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Got a call on the line. We've got Ray on the line. Ray, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trendy Trev. Kaya from Noongar
Boodja.
How you going?
I'm good, my sis. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm good.
Good, good.
I've just got a question. I'm just concerned about the COVID and that it needs a host and, you know, what's happening in the zoological world. You know, we've had animals in the US and Australia show up as COVID positive.
Mm.
Are we actually, you know, being... you know, as conscious and as aware of this, you know, as we could be.
Well, regarding animals carrying the virus,
as a host, yeah.
Well, exactly. Look, I cannot answer that question, but it'd be good to have a doctor to
have that conversation, very important. The so-called virus did come from animals as such, as they said in market, the wet markets in China. And then we've known some animals have passed because of the coronavirus.
Yeah.
That is a very scary thought. And I've been talking to immunologists and virologists on this program since February. And that's a very important statement you make there, and a very important question to be answered. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Just want to know, are we being aware of it? Are we, quarantining animals in the same way we're doing, people?
Mm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Where are you based, Ray?
I'm in Baldivis in Rockingham.
Okay, rightio.
WA, yep.
Thank you. So tuned into the National Talkback program regularly?
Yes, on Noongar Radio as much as I can.
Yeah, fantastic. Look, that's a very important conversation, and I'm going to chase up a doctor to find out the answer to that question, because we are still living in an uncharted waters. We don't have a vaccine for the virus, and if it's killing human beings, and then if it starts to affect animals, that is very, very scary. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing with us, Ray. Good question.
Well, I'd love to hear back from you. Thank you for your time.
Lovely. You take care, sis. Bye-bye.
No
worries,
you too. Thanks. Bye.
Very important question there from Ray. Thank you very much sharing that with us. And, we'll chase up a doctor. Will it be a veterinarian? Not sure. And find out the answer to that question. But human beings are catching the virus, and thousands of people have died globally. I've heard about some animals catching the virus, and I never even thought further in that part, but it's a very important question. So we'll see what we can do regarding having that conversation, have that the answer to that question. Ray, thank you very much for calling, but I think a very important question. We all need to know what the answer to that question is. We don't have a vaccine, you mob. Murray, going to sign off here. Thank you very much for your company, you mob. Back in the hot seat again tomorrow with that deadly number, 1-800-422-416, National Talk Black. And otherwise, you can text the brother 24/7 0457140550 and a Facebook page as well, BBM987FM, and you can see all our photo shots there and all our yarns and podcasts as well. So very important tool. Have that conversation, Mob. Listen, stay safe, stay strong, stay black, stay deadly, and we are still in the pandemic and regarding COVID-19. So abide by the rules. Only vaccine we got at the moment, and that's washing your hand constantly, wearing masks, staying at home. Do what you need to do to keep it safe, and we'll get through this. As I say, we are all in this together. Thank you for your time, you mob. We yarn soon.
G'day, folks. Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it. Yellow water flowers smell them.